is enticing European factories and companies or businesses to move into the U.S. All right, those were some of the items that we picked for you for this Infinity section.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth section of the program is upon us. When it comes to economies of major countries, the focus is on countries of the G7. One of those countries, which was a major factor in the 2008 financial crisis, was the U.S., which is now experiencing record inflation, and as a result, a cost-of-living crisis similar to other countries around the world. But is the U.S. really on the cusp of another financial crisis? Well, starting point first is, let's take a look at what Americans are thinking about this. We turn to the latest Economist YouGov poll. For many Americans, they believe that the country is in a recession. Half of Americans, based on the graph that you see over here, or 51% to be exact, of adult Americans say the prices are the best indicator of an economic recession. And this chart outlines what they think are those indicators that contribute to an economic recession. Now, when asked how they would describe the current state of the American versus the global economy, well, more Americans say that the U.S. economy is in poor shape. They say when compared to the global economy. So that's another view by the Americans themselves. Now, in 2008, collapse in the housing prices, that's what triggered the global financial crisis. And here we're outlining that for you so you can see exactly what the flow is. And that is what the U.S. is experiencing right now. U.S. home prices recorded a second consecutive month-on-month decline for the month of August, something that the market has not experienced in the U.S. since early 2012. Think about that. That was 10 years ago. Now, every city in the U.S. has experienced a price fall. Every city. This is while housing inventory for sale is on the rise, meaning further large price falls are most likely probable. Now, we move on to a graph of what we're looking at when it comes to the U.S. house prices across all states. And behind me, you can see what is happening there in terms of the prices overall, which, again, we're seeing that to occur from what we understand, across all the states. Now, at the same time, demand has weakened as mortgage rates have surged. And how much have they surged by? Well, they have more than doubled since the start of the year to nearly 7%, making it much more challenging for Americans to meet monthly mortgage payments. Now, for those who experienced the 2008 financial crisis, one in four Americans, that's right, one in four Americans, actually have said that they were in a recession that's worse than the one in 2008. Currently, that they're in a recession worse than the one back in 2008. Okay, let's bring back economist and economic professor at the University of Notre Dame, Rüdiger Bachmann, see what he thinks. Rüdiger Bachmann, when it comes to the world economy, things are looking bleak for many countries, but if the U.S. falls into a recession, well, this will surely affect other countries in the world. So what state is the U.S. economy actually in?
As far as the rest of the year is concerned, I think we will see certainly anemic growth, but that is part of the intention by the Federal Reserve, right? The Federal Reserve wants to cool down the economy, needs to cool down the economy to fight inflation. And what the best we can hope for right now in the U.S. is sort of a soft landing with, subdued growth. If at all, maybe sidestepping, sort of moves of GDP and a continued low unemployment rate.
All right, a soft landing in the U.S., that's what our guest there seems to think. Let's bring in Keith Pelbeaming again. He's a professor of international economics and finance at City University, who rejoins us here. Keith Pelbeam, taking a look at the 2008 financial crisis, there are similarities here, and we're looking at interest rates being increased by the central banks in response to inflation mainly. At this point, it is said that the global economy is heading towards a recession. Do you agree with that outlook?
What we know is interest rates are going up globally. They've gone up already in Europe, they're going up in the UK, they're going up in the US, and it takes a time for that to actually affect the economy. It's not like it happens instantly. So there will be, you know, a bit of a time interval before those interest rates actually start to slow the economy in a meaningful way. But we also got the Ukraine situation, which of course has put Europe in recession and the UK. The US is behind us when it comes to the recession. They're headed to a recession, I'm pretty sure of that, but they're behind us. And what we know is that when the US goes down into recession, other countries will quickly follow. And of course, the dollar has got stronger, and this actually pushes up, you know, for emerging markets, their currencies depreciate against the dollar, and they've got debt that they have to pay back in dollars. Their imports will become more expensive because they require dollars, and they've got to give more of the local currency to get it. So the outlook for emerging markets is not very good. Plus, of course, China itself has its own particular problems with the COVID lockdown and slowing economy in general, and also property crises that they don't like to talk too much about, but it takes a while to deal with property crises. And so the outlook does not look good for 23, you know, the year 2023 to 2024 globally at all, in my opinion.
The problem is not limited to the United States when it comes to the housing crisis. The UK is also facing a similar problem. The Bank of England raised interest rates by a historic 75 basis points last week. Analysts believe higher monthly home loan costs will pull another 400,000 people into poverty in the coming year. The rising rates is expected to plunge an extra 120,000 households in the UK into poverty when their current mortgage deal ends. Families now need to spend 54% of their monthly income on housing costs, up from 38%. In cash terms, this equates to an average increase of £250, from £610 a month to £860 a month. Other European economies are also in the same predicaments. The European Central Bank has also announced a new hike of interest rates in a bid to bring down record inflation in the Eurozone. The central bank's interest rates have a cascading effect across the Eurozone and directly influence the rates that commercial banks offer to households and businesses. Mortgage rates in the euro area have risen significantly since the beginning of 2022. There are now fears that the world is edging toward a global recession in 2023, which is marked by a string of financial crises in emerging markets and developing economies that would do them lasting harm.
All the signs are there. A world economic recession is inevitable. Not a day goes by when there aren't dismal readings about the economies around the world. This study by the World Bank Group shows the amount of pessimism that exists when it comes to a world recession. Just check out these insights. The odds of recession in Europe, the United States, and China are significant and increasing, and a collapse in one region will raise the odds of collapse in the others. The risk of a global recession trifecta are rising by the day. If these two economies, the US and China, are both in their respective versions of a recession, then that will virtually guarantee a global downturn. Given their current weaknesses and challenges, such a scenario is quite possible. But I'm less convinced of this than I probably was a few months ago. Time now to take a look at factors that, once taken into account, shows that a global recession is inevitable. Let's start with the US. The number one driver of US's economy is shopping, but American shoppers are tired. After more than a year of rising prices on just about everything, their wages are not keeping up and consumers have pulled back. Then a U.S. shipping giant made a surprise announcement that it was tightening its belt. In mid-September, FedEx, which operates in more than 200 countries, unexpectedly revised its outlook. It warned that demand was softening and earnings were likely to plunge more than 40%. Then comes the U.S. stock market. It burst territory almost consecutively on Wall Street, in which stocks are now on track for their worst year since 2008. After the consecutive tanking of U.S. stock markets, the bond market sounded a loud warning that the U.S. economy might be headed toward a recession, and it pointed to this, an inverted yield curve, which means when the yield on one-year Treasury bonds dips below the yield for two-year bonds, a recession has followed. Which may be a reason why research firm Ned Davis has said that there's now a 98% chance of a global recession. And guess what? The firm's recession probability reading has only been this high twice before, in 2008 and 2020. And finally, it's not that hard to see that the world may be in the cusp of a global downturn when there are protests happening around the world. That does it for this segment of the program.
The economy of the U.S. and the U.K. are on shaky grounds. One needs to look no further than the energy prices and inflation. And we have covered at length the impact that rising interest rates will have in this program. Main goal being that it will tame inflation and it will bring it down. But what if it doesn't bring inflation down? You thought about that, or has the Fed thought about that, or the central banks thought about that? I mean, economic logic and theory states that it should, but what if it doesn't? After all, we're looking at an uncertain and unstable economic environment. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great for you to actually tune in to us. We do appreciate that. For Mika Petakwe and the team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وجنود إبليس أجمعون
And the soldiers of Iblis all together.
قالوا وهم فيها يختصمون
They will say while they dispute therein,
تالله إن كنا لفي ضلال مبين
By Allah, we were indeed in manifest error.
Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 96th verse of this chapter, Surah Ash-Shu'ara. قالوا وهم فيها يختصمون تالله إن كنا لفي ضلال مبين And they will say, when they are mutually quarreling therein, by Allah, we were certainly in manifest error. Now, what we understand first from these two verses is that contrary to the environment of paradise, which is entirely full of safety and peace, the hell is always full of blame. It is always full of enmity and curse. The curse of the followers to the mischief leaders and the blame of the sinners unto Satan. The hate of the worshipped deities unto the polytheists and the act of quitting the criminals from each other. Now the Holy Quran is replete with these verses discussing these aspects, including these holy verses of the Holy Quran, which illustrate the scene of the conflict and the quarrel of those that are therein. When they are in the hell, they quarrel both with their deities and with each other. So the verse says, قَالُوا وَهُمْ فِيهَا يَخْتَصِمُونَ They will say, when they are mutually quarreling therein. The word يختصمون comes from خصم, which means enemy. And this خصم, an enmity, has its origins in the false loves and likes of this world. This is what originates the fight of hereafter, even in the fire of hell, quarreling with each other. So this quarreling, this fight between the enemies of Allah still continues unto that world and in the fire of hell, which means they will not stop even there. قَالُوا وَهُمْ فِيهَا يَخْتَصِمُونَ They will say when they are mutually quarreling therein, and yes, these misguided worshippers will say, تَاللَّهِ إِن كُنَّا لَفِي ضَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ By Allah, we were certainly in manifest error. They believe, they confess to their own problems and sins, and their inner selves will be awakened on that day.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
we
approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So the verses say, قَالُوا وَهُمْ فِيهَا يَخْتَصِمُونَ تَاللَّهِ إِن كُنَّا لَفِي ضَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ. They will say, when they are mutually quarreling, by Allah, we were certainly in manifest error. So this is the time that these enemies of Allah, these polytheists, these worshippers of false idols, they will believe and they will truly understand and recognize that they were in manifest error. The word dhalal means something which is totally away from the truth. And this manifest error means something that either it is manifest right now or something which was manifest in the other world, in the world, I mean, but we were not truly recognizing that because we were not looking at the things that the vicegerents of the Almighty Allah told us. We were not listening to how the prophets invited us. So although this was dalalin mubin, this was manifest error, but we could not have understood that because we were not listening or we did not want to listen. This is what the false idols do to human beings. This is what living without logic does to human beings. You may remember they said, بَلْ وَجَدْنَا أَبَاءَنَا كَذَلِكَ يَفْعَلُونَ. They said, we found our fathers so doing, so we continue what they started. This is what happens, that they will understand they were in manifest error, dalalin mubin. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity has been our ongoing topic. The past few nights, we have been looking at some of those barriers, those mawani', those impeding forces that sometimes block us from achieving this desired identity. You know, years ago, I gave the example, I gave the example of a boxing ring. Or for UFC guys, an octagon, let's say. Now, you know, back in the day, you know, we were talking about Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. And now you have, you know, McGregor and you have all these other foolish characters who are in the octagon. So I want you to imagine now you have these two fighters inside this ring and the match is scheduled for, let's say, 10 rounds. In the first round, one boxer dominates. The boxer being dominated goes back to his corner. He's bleeding. He's cut. He's swollen. At that moment, does his coach throw in the white towel? No. It's round one. He says, look, he got you in round one, go back out, have some respect, get him in round two. And this back and forth battle happens for the full 10 rounds. Nobody gets knocked out. And then finally, when they announce the winner, they raise the hand of a guy whose face is messed up. Please follow the example. Messed up. There's blood from his ear, his one eye is swollen shut, he can barely talk, but he's smiling, one tooth is missing, but he's the winner. Ajib. He's the winner. If this is the state of the winner, imagine what the loser looks like. He can barely talk. He can't even look. But he's the winner. And everybody accepts him as the winner, even though he is riddled with scars. But the only thing the scars show us is that he was in a battle for 10 rounds. That's one example. Come to another example. Sometimes they show on online how these vets come back from overseas, right? From Iraq, they come back home and they surprise their kids in a graduation or, you know, this and that. I want you to imagine one of these soldiers come back from one of their assignments, now, let's say overseas, and they're sitting with the family. The family is there, you know, the nice big reunion now, right? Celebrating his return. There's cake and there's a barbecue, the whole nine, blah, blah, blah. Then they sit around afterwards. Can you tell us some stories from the battlefield? The front lines, what was it like? Oh my God, I must have been like, you know, just staring at death. He's like, oh, it was crazy, this and that, talking about war stories and how, you know, I lost my men and good friends of mine and blah, 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 and we were right in the trenches and this and that. And one guy is looking at him and thinking, you know what, there's not even a pimple on this guy's face. Forget a scar. He's walking just fine, all 10 fingers, all 10 toes. There's no amputation. There's nothing. Actually, he looks better than he did before he left. Yeah, were you in that battle? Yeah, I was right there, really. You don't show signs of a battle. The boxer did. Sometimes when my young guys, when us, we kind of go back inwards. And we go through a little bit of, why do I have this fear of rejection? Why am I not stronger than I should be, or I am? And it kind of brings about old scars. Maybe some trauma. Who knows? Maybe I have self-confidence issues. I put on a great show, right? Sometimes the ones who are great on social media are the ones that really have the deep-rooted problems. I always say this, right? When a husband sends a nice, beautiful message on social media, happy anniversary to my wife, to my one and only, my love, my sub-coach, my heart cheese, right? All sorts of emojis and pictures and this and that. Those are the couples I'm worried about the most. And sometimes we're afraid to visit scars. Baba, those scars simply mean that you've been in a battle with Shaitan and with yourself. It's okay. You can show up in front of Allah with scars on your body. It will show you that, look, I didn't succumb. I didn't throw the towel in the first round. I went mano a mano with Shaitan. The difference is I'm left standing. Yeah, I lost some iman. I lost a few things. I had a couple of bad years. I fell. I slipped. I was trying to figure it out. But they're scars. But nonetheless, I'm here. I'm still saying La ilaha illallah. And the same way that boxer had his hand raised, inshallah, you'll say, you know what? Enter Jannah. With those scars. All it shows is that you were in a battle. Don't be afraid to look inwards to find out, why am I so scared to be rejected? Why? What am I afraid of? This guy, these people, this email, they don't even know my last name. And they're going to sit there and dictate to me my path? Meanwhile, people who love me, cherish me, are with me, are egging me on, cheering me on, pom-poms, the whole nine. But they don't mean much. Yeah, they're biased. These people, for some reason, I don't know why, they have a grip on me. It's not them. They're an empty canoe. They just trigger what's already inside of you. Remove that, the canoe won't bother you. Because it is a capacity issue. God says, I will not ask you except for that which is part of your capacity. It's not possible. We know how our kids work. We know, for example, how much I can lift, I can do. I won't. I won't ask anything else. Right? If I'm, you know, example I've given before, if I'm sitting there and I'm moving furniture, let's say I'm moving furniture. Right? Let's say we're going to swap the living room, the sofa goes here, the table goes here, fine, okay. So I asked my little five-year-old guy, okay, Hassan, you grab that end of the couch, and I got this end. On the count of three now, use your knees, boy. Don't use your back, use your knees, ready? And it goes like this, the sofa. I go, what happened? You didn't lift, let's try it again. 3, 2, 1, lift. Goes like this. Baba, I'm 5 years old. Can't do it. I can't lift the whole sofa on this side. I don't have the capacity. Like, obviously, I said, but it's foolish of you. Yeah, it's foolish of me to expect more than what this boy can give me. God knows your capacity. He knows your story. He knows your scars. He does. Absolutely, he knows. Doesn't wish to make things difficult on you. مَا يَفْعَلَ اللَّهُ بِعَذَابِكُمْ What will I gain, he says, by punishing you? By making life difficult for you. I don't wish to allow you to drown in your sin. كَتَبَ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ رَحْمَةً I've made mercy wajib upon myself. If namaz is wajib on you, mercy is wajib on me. I can miss salat, but God can't miss his mercy. So look inwards. Figure out the fear. Figure out the rejection. If that means that you travel through old wounds, it's okay. Don't be afraid of those wounds. Sometimes those wounds actually, you know, they open up pathways. Sometimes, you know, when I had my blinds closed and I'm trying to sleep in the morning, and sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of a crack in between the blinds and that light hits me right in my eyes, right? 7 a.m., 8 a.m., I need some rest. I have a long day ahead of me. Long programs in the evening. I need some rest. And I'm sleeping, and I just found my spot in my pillow. Oh. Tossing and turning, and then that sunlight hits me right there. And it wakes me up through a crack of the blinds. Sometimes it's those cracks of our heart where the light enters. Don't be afraid to stand there in front of God scarred, saying, yes, you know what? When I was 15, 16, I was confused. I made horrible, horrible, horrible things. I'm coming back to you, but I really want to figure this out. I don't want to fear the rejection of others. Because I'll mention this one more time to you. The idea is that we cannot please everybody. It's impossible. If there are 300 people in this whole property right now, and I expect with my 145-minute little, you know, small, little, simple, ignorant speech that I'll please everybody, no, there'll be some people that will leave tonight saying, oh, what a waste of time, man. We're sitting at home. Came here, listen to this. It's bound to happen. What's an easier equation is not to try to please everybody, but try to please him. No? 300 versus 1. He's Ya Sari Ar-Rida. He's easily pleased. And it's not easily pleased. It's Sur'at. Sari and it's Sur'at. He gets to pleasure very quickly. Does not take much to please him. Meaning what? If this is him and this is his pleasure, he's traveling at a very, very fast speed, God is. That's what sari' means. He gets there very quickly. People like me, I'm happy with you. One day, next week, voi banda jo hai, my number one dushman. So I understand the idea of acceptance by others at the cost of God. Let's be careful. Identify. And I'm talking to myself right here. Why is there already an existing fear inside of me? And why do I use that to preemptively now damage my path? Those are internal discussions that I think have to happen.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
Limelight. COP27 delegates in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, have agreed to establish a loss and damage fund that would compensate developing countries hit hardest by climate change. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. The world's poorest countries have scored a historic victory at the COP27 climate summit in Egypt after countries agreed to set up a fund to help poor countries being battered by climate disasters, but delayed approving a wider deal outlining global resolve to fight climate change. After tense negotiations that ran through the night, the Egyptian COP27 presidency early on Sunday released a draft text for an overall agreement and simultaneously called a plenary session to gavel it through as the final overarching agreement for the United Nations summit. The session approved a tax provision to set up a loss and damage fund to help developing countries bear the immediate costs of climate-fueled events such as storms and floods. But it kicked many of the most controversial decisions on the fund into next year, when a transitional committee would make recommendations for countries to then adopt at the COP28 climate summit in November of 2023. Developing countries have been asking for help with loss and damage, financial assistance to rescue and rebuild stricken countries after climate-related disasters for more than a decade. But rich countries have until now refused, providing limited cash instead to help them cut greenhouse gas emissions and build defenses against extreme weather. Spirits are high, said Jean Sou, Energy Justice Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. Jean Sou added, climate vulnerable nations and civil society are beaming at a big step forward on creating a loss and damage fund, more than a decade in the making. Maisa Rojas, Chile's environment minister, called the fund a historic step. But a deal was still uncertain as the clock ticked on the extension of the COP27 United Nations Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, running well beyond delegates' Friday, 18th of November deadline. Mohamed Addo, Director of Energy and Climate at the think tank PowerShift Africa, said, COP27 United Nations Climate Summit has done what no other COP summit has achieved, and created a loss and damage fund to support the most impacted communities of climate change. This has been something which vulnerable nations have been calling for since at least the 1992 Rio Earth Summit in Brazil. It was a day of high drama in Sharm el-Sheikh and bitter conflict between rich and poor nations. Some of the world's poorest countries denounced richer nations for delaying action and refusing financial assistance for afflicted countries for so long. The German broadcaster Deutsche Welle has also covered the same story. Climate negotiators agreed early on Sunday, 20th of November, to establish a fund to compensate developing and climate-vulnerable countries hit hardest by worsening weather extremes. After 2 weeks of fraught negotiations at the COP27 climate conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, negotiations were scheduled to end on Friday, 18th of November, but disagreements over key issues led to the conference going into overtime. Countries managed to strike a deal on the thorniest issue, compensating poor countries, those least responsible for climate change, for loss and damage caused by climate change. That came after the G77 group of developing nations, who have long called for industrialized nations to pay reparations for climate harm, had the issue added to the official COP agenda for the first time. Full details still have to be hammered out. The fund was not optimal, but it addressed developing nations' basic demand that major historical polluters, such as the United States of America and the European Union, help vulnerable countries pay for damage caused by climate change. This was tweeted by Pakistan's climate minister, Sheri Rahman, whose country was hit by massive deadly flooding in the summer of this year. The agreement on the compensation fund came after a draft final declaration was partially approved. However, an overall final agreement on other sticking points is still pending. Other major sticking points have included increased funding for developing and climate-vulnerable countries to adapt to a warming world, language around phasing out climate-warping fossil fuels, and an agreement to lock countries into increasing their ambitions to cut greenhouse gas emissions. the European Union threatened to walk away from the negotiations at one point in Sharm el-Sheikh, saying commitments on emission cuts lacked ambition and would fail to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, a target reaffirmed at the Glasgow summit last year. Current action has the world on track for up to 2.7 degrees Celsius warming, which would cause widespread drought, water scarcity, and flooding. The host country, Egypt, faced criticism for its chaotic approach to negotiations, with allegations from negotiating parties that they were not distributing key texts and key information, and even that they were not acting as an honest broker. The agreement on climate reparation payments represented a major U-turn in the talks after the European Union softened its position near the end of the summit. Big polluters had previously resisted a specific fund in fear of being liable for all climate-related extreme weather events. The European Union initially offered to establish a special fund that would cover particularly vulnerable nations in exchange for commitments on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and if China, now the world's biggest emitter, would pay into this fund. But the idea faced opposition from the Group of 77, the G77 Group of Developing Nations, a coalition of 134 developing countries, who wanted funding for all of its members, including fossil fuel producers and emitters, countries like India and Pakistan. And big polluters, such as the United States of America, were reticent to commit finance to such a fund. Negotiators at COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, have also clashed over the failure to mention a phase down of all fossil fuels in the agreement. India had insisted that the final text ask countries to phase down all fossil fuel use and not just coal. Brazil also committed to introducing a zero deforestation law for the Amazon rainforest in 2023, with the Democratic Republic of Congo and Indonesia also showing intent to follow suit.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Sayyid Naghvi. Sayyid Naghvi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu
alaikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of cultural attack or cultural invasion, which is, we can say, the attack against the Islamic values or the system of the values in a Muslim country. First, let's start with the definition of cultural invasion or cultural attack. What is it, Sayyid Mohsen?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, this concept of cultural invasion has come after the World War, which was basically when you want to invade a country, the concept was that you do not need to invade physically.
Okay.
Rather, you go in there, you change their culture, you change their mentality, and you make them someone who thinks like you, who dress like you, who talks like you, and he is in line with you. When you can do this to any culture, actually you have invaded that country without having a physical, you know, appearance in that country.
Yes.
So when we talk about the cultural invasion, is that when someone's living style, his own culture, when people, they forget about that.
Yes.
So this becomes a cultural invasion.
And this could be against any type of culture?
Yes.
I mean, native culture, for example?
Any type of native culture. That's cultures.
Right. That's right. Okay. So the global lifestyle, Shaykh Rouhani, has changed people very much the same. I mean, for example, when you look at the Japanese, the suits are very much the same like the Westerners. Even Iran nowadays, you know, the system of the wearing clothes or something like that. The Native Americans, or we could say the Indians, also Africans, they are following a kind of global lifestyle. Can we call this global lifestyle, which is very much rooted in the Western ideology and philosophy, a kind of cultural invasion or not?
Of course, why not? You know, if we, of course, if you go back, for example, to India or China or Japan or Africa, for example, some decades back, you see, of course, as you mentioned, the way of clothing. I mean, generally their culture was totally different as compared to now. And so if they changed in the course of time, and now we have modern kind of culture in those countries, in those nations, and of course it is the result of a kind of cultural attack or cultural invasion, we can say. This is what happened in this 21st century and 20th century. Yeah, this is the reality.
Yes.
We cannot...
This is not part, this is not, you believe, the part of natural, for example, development of human beings, for example,
no,
the modern day or 21st century.
No, I don't think so. You know, if for example, if India naturally developed, so they should develop their own values, their own cultural systems. Or, for example, for Muslims, for Iranian, you know, Iran is a very old nation.
Yes.
An old country.
Yes, the ancient country.
Of course, their culture is, again, a very powerful and strong culture.
Yes.
So if it naturally improved in the course of time, it should be an Iranian culture, not a westernized culture.
Yes.
So this is out of the, it is the result of that invasion or that attack.
That's right.
Before we go forward, we if you look at the, you know, even the definition of global arrogance, you'll find many writers who wrote that this global arrogance is a term which is used to describe the culture and economic hegemony of the United States over other countries. And on top of that, Thomas Friedman has remarked in 1999 that the global arrogance is when your culture and economic clots are so powerful and widely diffused that you do not need to occupy other people to influence their lives. So this is not something that has naturally, we can say, like, has come, like, or maybe people are changing their lifestyle. It is not the case.
Okay.
It is something which is plotted with the planning, with the strategies, which were made, I said, like, after the World War.
This is my main question. And what are the strategies? For example, we can say acting against the religious values of a country is the first one, whether it is, for example, Christianity or Judaism or, I don't know, Islam.
Yeah.
Okay?
There are two ways. Yeah, there are two ways. When we look at the French government, they have openly opposed the religious thoughts.
Yes.
For example, in Iran, there was hijab, putting on veils. They officially said to, you know, the king of the time, Reza Shah, to order everyone not to put veil. So this was an open, we can say, like, opposing the religious...
Kashf for hijab, you mean?
Kashf for hijab,
unveiling
yes.
the women, yes.
For example, when they were mourning in the month of Muharram, they stopped them from mourning in the month of Rahm Muharram. So this is one of the ways which we can see, which was not so, we can say, effective. The other way, the way America is doing.
Yes.
They make people secular. They say religion is different from your life. So this secular thought...
But Said Mohsen, they say that America is more religion than some of the European countries.
Well, if religion
Even, for
means...
example, the president has an oath of allegiance on the Bible or something like that. So what is this type of religion?
Well, that's what I said. The secular religion, being a religious in a secular meaning, that, you know, you show that you're religious, but you're not religious.
Okay.
You don't give any attention towards the religion. For example, how many times the president of U.S. who have taken oath on Bible or something like that, how many Sundays he attended the church?
Okay.
You will see it rarely.
Even maybe the Republicans more than the Democrats.
Yes.
Okay.
So you see it rarely.
Okay.
You know? So this is the case. When you make everything secular, secular means like the everything is different from others. There is no role of religion in your life. So when you take out religion And let me just give this example. Generally, we give this example in our own language, like Urdu, when we talk. Maybe in Persian it is also. You know, when we want to make a bread, we, you know, mix it with the water.
Yes.
And we put some salt in it in order to make some taste, to build some taste.
Okay.
So generally, the other things of life in religion should be equal to the salt that we mix into that, you know, mixture of the, like the wheat and the water.
You mean they must find a taste?
Yeah, this is a taste.
Taste.
Whereas the religion has become the salt right now in our lives.
Okay.
It's just a taste. You know, for change of taste, we go to mosque for prayer.
Yes.
Juma prayer, for example.
Okay.
Or there are many people who just read the Eid prayers on the day of Eid every year, and they have nothing to do with the religion for the rest of their life.
That's for the rest of their lives.
For the rest of their life.
That's right. Okay. That's all right. Okay, Sheikh, even the educational system, you know, and the books which are taught at the universities and the schools in terms of the content are very much different from the past decades in so many countries. It seems that the Western values found their way into the education and educational system of so many Muslim lands too, isn't it?
Yes, of course. You know, this modern system itself is problematic for the Muslims.
Okay.
If you want to be a true Muslim, really, honestly, if you want to be a true Hindu, a true Buddhist, I don't know, a true Jew, a true Christian, you know, this kind of modern systems, which are based on certain kind of modern, let's say, secular or something like values, or atheism is behind this, humanism is behind this, or human centrism is behind this, philosophically talking. That's why this system is problematic, first of all. So then the outcome of these modern systems is not in line with the interests of the believers of the, let's say, Islamic culture. That's why we see that the engineers, the perfect, the, let's say, the professional and expert engineers, when they are graduated from these modern systems, they go to the US, they go to Europe, they serve for them, these, let's say, countries and for their factories and companies. They do not stay in their own countries. They do not, let's say, serve for their own people. They do not help their own people because their mindset is changed.
Yes.
What they are looking for is those things that rely in those countries and those, let's say, companies and factories. You know, this is the problem that nowadays we have. And that is why we have to change these kind of systems. We have to, let's say, bring about some kind of revolution in our educational systems from the school to the universities.
Yes.
Otherwise, the outcome of this system is this thing that's happening in our countries and our nations.
Now we are producing an English language program. Do you believe that, for example, English language, learning and teaching it is a cultural invasion? So we are in the wrong ground now or not? Say it.
Well, it depends. If you use the books and material which are designed for the cultural invasion through English learning or like, you know, the process, then obviously, yes, it is. The reason I'm saying it is that if you go and look at the reason and aims and goals of the Oxford syllabus, which has been taught, which is taught like in the whole world, like in Pakistan, in other countries.
Yes.
The aim and goals of developing Cambridge syllabus for the schools.
Okay.
When you go and find out, it is all to take your own culture to these countries. That was the main goal. And therefore, they are conveying their own message through this syllabus.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Yes.
The second thing is, obviously, when someone wants to have the invasion, like the cultural invasion, we have seen that, especially against Islam, that is the main point, because we are living in a Muslim country. Yes. And Islamophobia. You know, in the movies, if you see the movies in late 60s, maybe 70s, 80s, 90s, whenever they wanted to show the Muslims, they used to show Arabs.
Yes.
As someone who does not know about the life, he is living backward life.
Barbaric. Yes.
Killing, I don't know, the pirates from the Arabs, maybe. Yes, yes. You know? So this was the picture, which they picturized about the Islam, the Muslim world.
Yes.
And later, how they, you know, they did all those things, it end up to ISIS and Daesh.
Yes.
For example.
This is what Professor Edward Said, in his famous book, Orientalism, has pictured, that how Muslims and the Arabs were pictured in the Western media, and how the Arabs and the Muslims themselves believed the picture. This is the sad part, okay?
Because the Hollywood was, you know, a fame. It had a fame. Mm-hmm. And everyone wanted to watch the movies. So that was the best quality movies at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So they believed this.
Yes.
That was the main issue. The